Hi, you're listening to View from the Top, the podcast where we aim to provide valuable perspectives and viewpoints from some of the key figures within the leather industry, as well as the latest news and insight from around the world. We upload several free episodes each month on the most exciting topics that are affecting the leather sector right now, available wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Deputy Editor Tom Hogarth, and in today's episode, we'll cover three articles around some of the most important things for the leather industry to preserve as it continues to change and adapt in the coming years. Thank you to our sponsor for this episode, The Sauer Report. In our first article for today, Katie Cutskill, Technical Director at the Sustainable Leather Foundation, comments on how the information age has caused us to lose touch with artisanship. Katie wrote, "There are six screens within an arm's reach, all in one room. A laptop, extended display, television, digital photo frame, work phone and personal phone. Scratch that, seven. Almost forgot the smartwatch. It is a beautiful thing to be so connected to our world, our families, our friends, but how does the massive information at our fingertips affect our attention spans, focus, intellect, or our values? These questions have all begun to flood modern-day psychology and sociology research, and yet we are still the living subjects of this ongoing experiment every day. How is the information age affecting us? We can all feel it, but struggle to find words that describe its impact on our lives. Burnt out from taking nighttime work calls, managing what children have access to, needing to rely on apps to buy groceries, schedule our lives, chat with global friends, and so much more. The ease of use of the information age allows us to do more with less, and while this has characteristically improved our lives, we can see this same thread of truth in the products we buy. Do more, use less, complete more tasks using less time, manufacture more products using less resources, purchase more items using less money. This is the only world we have ever known. A world where we are continuously striving to improve, but improvement relies upon measuring the tangible aspects of our lives, leaving behind much of the nuanced, personal attributes that we cherish. Can we see this phenomenon occurring throughout our lives? Frozen meals and fast food taking a front seat to a home-cooked meal, opting to skip the book and watch the television remake instead, getting a quick walk on the treadmill rather than spending time in nature. These options are the beauty of our era, but in each of these decisions, we are choosing our values. This point is not to shame, but rather to help us see how we wish to connect with our world and ourselves. It's in this same pattern that we can draw parallels to the pains we are experiencing in the leather industry. For some, the push to go vegan is purely about animal rights, but those in marketing know that vegan is a fantastic sell for the lower cost synthetic option. Are we as an industry truly fighting a major shift in animal welfare awareness? I largely think not. Rather, we are battling generations of people that are shifting in values with the influx of incomplete information. We don't have a metric yet to place a value on the craftsmanship and artisanship that goes into a handcrafted leather product, nor a measurement to show the passion, experience, and history that goes into one of the oldest known trades in our world. We don't have an easy way to teach younger generations that the delayed gratification of investing in a handmade, lifelong leather product will bring lasting satisfaction over the two-day delivery, one-season throwaway. However, it's in this sacred space of non-measurable value that we can begin to find solutions. Solutions to reimagine our values and adjust them where necessary to blend the old with the new. Solutions to find ways to teach each other about how products such as leather celebrate us as humans, evolving and sharing our culture worldwide. We can do this by engaging in conversations with our co-workers, family members and friends to talk about the values that lie in between those which are measured by our information age. If we first connect with ourselves and ask, "Why do I cherish the leather belt my grandmother passed down to my mother and then to me?" we understand what we feel. And if we understand what we feel, we can then sell our product on more than its stunning performance. We can sell it on how it connects us with our past, present, and future. How leather products showcase an industry built on a trade that stretches across every region of the world. We must begin to talk about the generations of tanners and leather workers and share their stories with young generations just beginning to dream of what they want to be when they grow up. Begin a cross-corporation pen pal or mentor program for young people choosing a career path. Utilize existing organizations and companies to offer scholarships and introductory courses for high schoolers to try out leather before they attend university. We have these connections in our industry. We have the passion. We have the story. It is up to us to connect with ourselves and ask ourselves why leather, and then boldly share it to those up-and-coming generations. Our history speaks for itself, and if we only focus on the tangible metrics, we are in essence stuck forever on the treadmill, never making our way back out into nature. This is how we can keep leather alive in the information age. This is how we can use the information age to instill the value of craftsmanship for generations to come. And now, a short message from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by The Sow Report. The Sow Report is the world's leading hides and skins pricing platform, providing subscribers with comprehensive coverage of the global raw materials markets, as well as in-depth leather industry analysis and reports from experts you know and trust. Head to thesourreport.com to gain an edge on the competition and stay ahead of a rapidly changing industry. That's the SAUERreport.com. Up next, Mike Redwood looks to the history of the leather industry and the importance of preserving historical objects made of leather in an article titled Leather Objects Tell the Truth and Should Be Conserved. Mike said, "Making promises that will knowingly not be kept, rewriting history for ideological purposes, and turning the fabric of everyday well-being, food and fuel for example, into weapons of war have become commonplace. By comparison, the leather industry cannot hide the truths of history. They are written in large letters within the hundreds of thousands of objects that sit in our museums all over the world. The Museum of Leathercraft in Northampton alone has nearly 10,000 items, and the nearby Shoe Museum probably holds more. But almost every major and minor museum around the world holds items such as gloves, saddles, shoes, garments, cases, writing desks, or one of many other items made with leather on their shelves and in their vaults. Leather has a history told through physical archives, through plain-speaking objects that can be observed and often handled, leather-bound books and journals, major texts preserved through centuries on parchment, items owned by emperors and royalty, and items used by ordinary people to make the best of everyday life. We need to look after this multitude, as it is only the leather industry's artifacts that can take us through the history of leather and of civilization itself. Hides and skins provided the first sheet material able to be used in various forms of preservation suited to the knowledge and the conditions of the times. It was used for clothing, shelter, carrying, transporting, fighting, working, and many other things required for society to progress through uncountable millennia. Last week at West Dean, a wonderful country house in the south of London, the Leather Conservation Centre ran its annual course for conservationists and museum staff from around the world. A full house of attendees from museums, along with conservation experts from a multitude of institutions, worked on how to conserve artifacts from many ages and civilizations. It is hard to grasp the importance of these objects to society. We worked through historic Islamic texts, children's footwear left from the concentration camps of the Holocaust, sporting and military items from 8th century Japan to a 20th century Great War football found spiked onto a frontline fence, along with ageless agricultural footwear from China and traditional luncheon boxes from Ethiopia. Through leather, they talked to us about history from ancient times to the present, mapping each stage of the advancement of society, and they do not tell lies. They also remind us that leather offers longevity and articles made from them have, throughout history, been repaired and repurposed. Certainly, many items come from ancient waste pits, but it is here that signs of repair are most often uncovered. Other items have been preserved and handed down through the generations, a story about where they have been and who has been the custodian. Some have survived because they have been buried without air and others trapped in the depths of the oceans. Some have seen use through the generations as is expected of a luxury handbag or a briefcase today. Drinking vessels are sometimes marked with the initials of father and then the sons. Like so many leather items, they wear in rather than wear out, build their character over time, and are repaired if stitching or other areas fail. Like an ancient tree, they are history, but also carry their story through time. Their injuries form part of their story, a history to tell and a patina that helps tell it. Historians now recognize that there is a lot of history in these objects yet to be understood and told. Each year, we discover in more detail how things were done in the past. Increasingly, we are looking east to places like Japan, where vegetable and chrome tanning were very late arrivals, and old methods can still be found in use. Melting glaciers and permafrost are releasing ancient artifacts to experts better able to handle them than in the past. They can now be conserved for extended examination. This means we must secure and conserve the leather industry back catalogue. the industry story, and the part leather played in the developing world. We need to support our museums and the staff who work on conserving the objects. I applaud the staff at the LCC for their work in conservation and commitment to the centre's role on education and research related to leather and leather objects. Conservation is an underfunded area, and around the world, government finance is patchy and decreasing. Globally, salaries for experienced graduates in conservation are below the starting salary offered a graduate in a tannery. Surely, the leather industry can look at this through different eyes and offer help. Start asking museums and conservators to delve into their physical archives and update the backstory of leather again and again, as there are so many stories that need telling. Use this archive with customers, designers, and communities to link the validity and learnings from the past with the high technology of the present, and to remind everyone that leather will always require craft and art, the human touch, to succeed. And to ensure the stories remain alive to be told in perpetuity, we need skilled conservators. All this is part of the industry's responsibility. Finally, in the March-April 2023 issue of ILM, Mike Redwood explained the importance of people to the leather industry and some of the issues on the radar in this area. Mike wrote, "The leather industry has a big requirement for people. First, to be able to produce leather and the articles made from it, and second, to have enough consumers to do that purchasing. For years, commenters worried about population growth accelerating too much. Given that the global population grew from 1.5 billion to 6.1 billion in the 100 years of the 20th century, they had a point. Yet, for the past decade, there have been signals that this growth was not forever. The leather industry saw the departure of the large boomer generation start, and because Generation X was small, there had to be a jump to younger generations in management. This accelerated during the pandemic. We have also watched pension systems strained as boomers moved into longer retirements. Current issues as France tries to raise pension age are not the first and will not be the last. It is a problem for democracy that an aging population increases the cost of pensions and healthcare, pushing out education and innovation. When philanthropic tanner Charles Booth persuaded the British government to introduce a universal pension, life expectancy after retiring from work was just 1 year. Countries such as Japan demonstrate the big social and economic changes that come with an aging society, and many new ideas about communal living and keeping the elderly fit offer useful guides for others. But even in this rich country, there is a worry that wealth will run out and automation cannot do enough. Recently, Prime Minister Fumio Kishida said, "Japan is standing on the verge of whether we can continue to function as a society." As in China and Spain, we are seeing the Japanese countryside emptying, making historic rural communities non-viable. In January, ahead of UN predictions, China's population figures showed a fall. In April, China was passed by India, where the population curve still has some more years of growth. The origin of all these changes goes back a couple of centuries to a period where health and hygiene improved survival chances at childbirth. Then, in the 1960s, the accelerating birth rate was impacted by better forms of birth control, which in particular empowered women. This quickly slowed childbirth growth, and this decline continued as rising urbanization put parents off having large families with the high costs of housing and education in cities. With China, the impact of the one-child policy has always been identified as the primary cause of its population problems, but prior to the one-child policy, China had the later, longer, fewer approach. Citizens were asked to wait later before marriage, leave 3 years between children, and limit themselves to two. Between 1971 and 1978, China's birth rate halved. In 1980, when the one-child policy began, it was strictly enforced and transformed China's demographics. Alongside this is the other demographic dimension, living longer. During the Cultural Revolution, China introduced barefoot doctors into the countryside, where health services were largely inaccessible. With a few months' basic training, these young people, who worked in the paddy fields when not on call, hence their name, made a huge impact. Between 1967 and 1977, life expectancy in rural China moved from below 50 to nearly 70. With widespread trends towards better education, improved access to birth control, and faster urbanization, geographer Danny Dorling noted that the global peak year for births was 1990. Population numbers now continue to rise, largely because at each census, we are counting the same people getting older rather than only new people. Japanese citizens are sophisticated buyers of luxury goods, including leather, but we have always been comfortable that the impact would be in the future, so we could carry on as normal for a while. Not now. I said much the same in a talk on the future of the industry to Cotans in 2015, when we were looking forward to 2025, a year that will soon be upon us. A faster shift of purchasing by younger consumers dominating will require the leather industry to work harder in the marketplace. This is not 100 years ago when leather still was the only viable material for most uses. Consumers now have choice. So, the change to a positive attitude within the leather industry towards marketing has been timely, but does need to be more generally supported. Do not leave it to others, and if you want to complain, then pay your dues and have a constructive say. Unlike Japan, Europe and the US have generally accepted immigration, and this has slowed the aging trend, especially in the US, although climate change will add to immigration as growing crops and living in Africa, Latin America, and on the Indian subcontinent will become harder. China is also a major buyer of luxury products, as well as wider leather goods, and is hoping that the post-COVID opening will get consumers releasing savings as domestic consumer expenditure drives the economy upwards. Looking at the bigger picture, China will remain a major consumer of leather. We saw China's labor force start shrinking about 7 years ago, and this, allied with other social and affluent costs, meant that for some products, such as athletic footwear, a move to places such as Vietnam and Cambodia has been ongoing for a while. In the leather network, the ingenuity of the Italian machinery companies has given tanneries new equipment, reduced labor intensity, and simultaneously improved quality. Tanneries can therefore be one of the least labor-intensive areas of the leather chain. Abattoirs have automated and robotic equipment, which could reduce labor content. Hopefully, they will invest more in this, having been shown up during the pandemic for continuing to use cheap labor instead. The rest of the industry, footwear, leather goods, gloves, and garments, manufacture today much the same way as 100 years ago, and all sectors still require large numbers of employees. True to Sustainability Development Goal 8, the leather industry has historically been good at offering decent work, training for ordinary folk to handle, judge, cut, trim, and sew leather. This is important in the emerging countries in the global south, where population growth remains at higher levels and large numbers of jobs have to be able to absorb big numbers of school leavers each year. Careers in leather offer a perfect opportunity for such markets to reduce the levels of poverty and have been good at supporting gender equality, two more sustainability development goals. In more advanced economies, work in leather also fits with demographic developments. Good examples are France, with its strong luxury industry with large workshops and some tannery ownership, and Portugal's growth in quality leather footwear production. Both have gained in part from taking manufacturing market share from China. For aging societies and those where increasing numbers are suffering from long-term disabilities or mental problems, leather plays an additional role. Increasingly, working in leather brings peace and tranquility. Leather humanizes a world overwhelmed by technology and cities of steel and glass. To work with a natural material and feel it adjust in your hands, shaped by humidity and warmth, has always created generations of contented workers. In groups or individually, leather work is helping many, young and old, deal with the stress of the modern world. No plastic or cellulosic mix can offer the same biophilic delight. The many changes ahead have already started, and there will be unexpected consequences, some hard to manage. But if the leather industry thinks such matters through, it can both help and do well. That's all for today. Thank you to the sponsor for this episode, The Sow Report. To get more of this content, as well as the latest leather industry news as it breaks, thought leadership, technical articles, other podcasts, ebooks, webinars, and more, consider subscribing to International Leathermaker. More details can be found at internationalleathermaker.com/subscriptions. Thank you for listening.